right. Well, good morning. You guys look awake, but you don't sound awake. So are you okay? We're just checking. We can hear them from the overflow over there, right? You know, we did change some things on the sound, so hopefully you guys online are able to hear us. I know our overflow room, they already had to turn up a little bit to be able to hear. So hopefully you guys are able to hear. Just turn up your volume, and then you can just pretend that I'm talking and then try and figure it out. Okay. It'll be fine. But, we are gonna be in Matthew chapter 5 today, and I want you to turn to Matthew chapter 5. Now, Matthew chapter 5 is one of the most amazing chapters in the entire Bible. The beginning of what we typically refer to as the Sermon on the Mount. And we spent about 9 or 10 months last year and a little bit of this year on Wednesday nights looking through the Sermon on the Mount. And so we are going to be in Matthew 5, 38 through 42. And for those of you that were there on Wednesday night, you're going to be hearing some of the same stuff, but some of the different things, right? It's going to be a little bit different. But before we get into that, we're going to share some memes. You ready to hear some memes of the week? You guys love those things. I know so much. Mark is so excited. I wish you could have seen his little childlike face go, it was awesome. So here, this one's similar to one we've already shown, but there is a reason why I chose to do this one. This is a picture of a school when your kids finally return after the coronavirus. There you go. Now, I'm showing this one because did you notice how every single person is sitting? I just love that picture where they all have their arms crossed. But who would have ever pictured what 2020 would be like? So the worst purchase of 2020 was a 2020 planner. Right? Yeah, you just got to throw that out the window once March hit because it didn't do you any good. But as we are kind of approaching July, this is how I think everyone's kind of approaching July. This little cartoon right here, them slowly opening the door to see what's going to get us. Now, the next one doesn't have really anything to do with coronavirus, with this day and age we're in, but it's just a good reminder for me. It's a little bit crass, too, so I apologize to my mom, who's probably watching, so sorry, Mom. But this one's here's a view of my plan versus God's plan, right? God's plan is toilet paper, my way is duct tape, so us toilet paper, right? I'm trying to explain it to the blind lady down here, and so she's trying to figure that out. Yes, thanks. Thanks for explaining that to her. But this last one is, you know how I mentioned that we looked at this passage that we're preaching from today. We talked about it on a Wednesday night. But yeah, God wants me to do that today. He wants me to look at this passage again. So this message right here, this meme, is for whoever didn't listen the first time, who needs to hear this the second time. So here's this meme. It says, whoever's supposed to go to Nineveh, just go already. Right? A little biblical illusion meme right there. But, you know, it seems like in this day and age, we have kind of forgotten how to get along with people, haven't we? We seem like we've kind of forgotten how to treat other people. It seems like we have just become people that react against someone else, and it's not always done in the best way. It's kind of a sad state of affairs when you think about the fact that we don't know how to disagree nice, polite anymore. We don't know how to get along together. But here's the question that I want to ask you today. Have you ever been wronged? You ever had someone who does something wrong to you? Right? How do you respond in those moments? Now, I want to tell you that that is the thrust of this passage that we're looking at in today in Matthew 5, verse 38 through 42. And let's go ahead and read that. Jesus is talking in the most incredible sermon ever preached. He's preaching that sermon. He says, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, don't resist an evildoer. On the contrary, if anyone slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. And for the one who wants to sue you and take away your shirt, let him have your coat as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to the one who asks you and don't turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. Now, I want to stop here for a minute because this is such a fascinating thing. It's such a fascinating thing. And Jesus begins with this right here. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. That's actually a direct quote from 3 Old Testament passages. It's actually Exodus 21, 24. It's actually Leviticus 24, 20, Deuteronomy 19, 21. And in this direct quote, notice what this is about. an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. This right here is actually represents one of the oldest known laws in the entire world. This even predates some of the Bible and some of the writings. You see this type of mindset, this type of philosophy. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It was typically known as the lax talionis, right? Now, I want you to think about this. Because notice what this is really about. Is this about how much vengeance you can get? How much revenge you can get on someone? Is it about getting after them, or is it about limiting the amount of vengeance and revenge you can get against someone? You ever thought about it that way? What this was really designed for, and you look at the Exodus 21 passage, the Leviticus 24 passage, the Deuteronomy 19 passage, it was very much this picture of not about, hey, you have the right to go get revenge, but it was, okay, if someone has wronged you, you can go this far and no further. You with me on all that? Is that important?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it is. It's important. But we're not going to take time to talk about that the rest of the day. Just know that that's important and go, okay, that's a big deal. But what Jesus is talking about here, and actually all of this goes back to some of the previous verses. If you go back to, what was it, like 19 and 20? Well, let's look at 20 here for a minute. Let's go to 19 and 20. I want to read it. It says, therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commands and teaches other to do the same will be called what? The least in the kingdom of heaven. So now all of a sudden it's about who's considered the least in the kingdom of heaven. Now look at verse 20. Verse 20 says, for I tell you, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will never get into the kingdom of heaven. That is the context right here. Notice it's about what is considered great, what is considered less, in the context of the kingdom of heaven. This is what's been set up. And Jesus says, your righteousness has to be greater than the Pharisees. Your righteousness has to be greater than those religious leaders that you would look at. So instantly they start going, wait, what? That's impossible. We can't be any better than our religious leaders are. And Jesus has been giving some examples on how that righteousness surpasses those of the scribes and the Pharisees. And this right here, our passage today, is about the fifth different set of examples that he's dealing with. And notice what the very first one is. It says, if someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other to him also. Now, all right, so I want to talk about this here for a minute. Mark, I need your help for a minute. Come on up here, Mark. Woohoo, you guys give Mark a hand. Come here, Mark. Mark. Woohoo. All right. I want you to stand right there. Here's what we're going to do for a minute. I need you to slow motion slap me. Don't fast motion slap me, please. My mom's watching. I'm just saying. I want you to slow motion slap me, okay? Are you ready? Should we act it up? You know, do I need to go, no. Slow motion slap me, okay. Stop right there. Pause right there. All right, I'm going to step out here for a minute. Notice what he's doing. Notice he's in place. He's right there. He is slow motion slapping me, and I'm going, no. Now, I want you to notice this for a minute. Where is he slapping? What is that? That's my left cheek, right? In case it swapped online, that's my left cheek, y'all. I'm just saying. Notice here. Why? All right, go ahead and put your arm down. Why is he slapping my left cheek? Why? Because he's right-handed, right? If you're going to slap someone, you instantly go that way, right? Now, we do have some left-handed people in here, and I intentionally did not call a left-handed person up here. One of the lefties just waved at me, and she used her left hand to do it. Another lefty waved with her left hand. Yeah, all the lefties, the lefty up there in the sound booth, he's waving with his left hand, right? Because if you slap someone, you instantly go to your dominant hand, right? Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. Ooh, you guys give Mark a hand, right? Yay! But notice here for a minute, 90% of the world, roughly, is right-handed. And when they slap you, it's going to hit your left cheek. But notice what Jesus said. Does he specify the cheek? Uh-huh, he does. Notice what cheek he specified. The right cheek. Actually, Mark, I need you back here for a minute. Come on. All right. Okay, come on back. Now, there's two ways that Mark can slap my right cheek. Now, your job is to slap my right cheek. What are the two ways you could do that? You can backhand, take your dominant hand and backhand, or use your non-dominant hand and do that. Which one would be more comfortable if you were to slap my right cheek? Probably the backhand, right? All right, thanks, Mark. Is this a big deal that Jesus specifies the right cheek? Jesus doesn't do anything accidentally. This is a big deal. This is an important thing. Notice what Jesus is talking about. He is not talking about a forehand slap that you're just going, ooh, I'm just so mad at you, I need to slap you. He's talking about a backhand slap, and that's why he says right cheek. When 90% of the world is right-handed, to do a right cheek, it's going to be a backhand slap. You with me on all that? Why is that a big deal? Okay? Why is that a big deal? Because I want you to picture this here for a minute. Because this illustration is really about how you respond to insults. This is really what this is about. This circumstance here about slapping your right cheek is about responding to insults. Now, according to rabbinic law, what the rabbis actually said in Jesus' day and age is that if you hit someone in the back with your backhand, you backhand slap someone, which would be a right cheek slap for a right-handed person to slap somebody, that was actually twice as insulting as hitting him with the front of your hand. Twice as insulting. That's what rabbinic law actually said. Now, stick with me here for a minute. Because what it's doing is, have you ever seen the old cartoons and all that where they take off a glove and slap someone backhandedly, right? That's where this came from, because that was what actually happened. If you wanted to insult someone, hitting them a slight little slap, it doesn't even have to be a real slap, but just a backhanded thing was considered an insult. Notice what Jesus is really saying is, he's saying, how do you respond when somebody insults you? This is the context, and this is what we're talking about here. How would you respond if someone does that? Now, what's really happening is, this is about a calculated contempt for someone. This is about you disdain someone, you don't like someone, you give them the backhanded slap, which is really in reality saying, you're nothing. I just have nothing but contempt for you. How do you respond to that, right? Most of us would be furious by being called a nobody. Most of us would be upset by being insulted so directly and in a way that's, you want to talk about right in your face? That's literally in your face, right? Very literally. Now, what happened is, according to the Lex Talionis, according to this idea of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, is you could seek damages. But notice what Jesus is saying. He's saying, don't do that. He's saying, lovingly absorb the insult. Notice what he's saying here. Now, this section began by talking about who's great in the kingdom, what actions are considered great and what actions are considered least. Keep all that in mind here, because he's talking about being great in the kingdom. And the idea here is that those that are insulted because of being part of the kingdom of heaven, and you cannot respond to insults by getting even. Isn't that what we typically do? Somebody insults you, you want to insult them back, right? Somebody makes fun of you, you want to make fun of them back. Isn't that typically what we do? But what's happening here is, Jesus is saying, when somebody insults you, you've got to swallow your pride. You've got to just give up those rights to what you consider fair. You've got to give up that idea of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. If somebody slaps you on your right cheek, show him your left as well. Notice that this is about more than just legal rights. This is about our heart. This is about how we treat others. And this is where, for a lot of us, this is where our passive-aggressive nature tends to kick in, right? Yeah, some of you want to admit you've been petty in your marriage or with a brother or sister or something. Poor Allison has the messiest husband in this room, I'm telling you. Y'all, I'm a messy, messy person, right? You have a spouse that's messy, what do you choose to do? Leave a little mess from them sometimes so they know how it feels, right? You have a friend that you're meeting them for lunch and they show up 10 minutes late. What do you do the next time you're meeting for lunch? You show up 10 minutes late so they know how that feels, right? Isn't that typically how we tend to handle things? We kind of go, it's this idea of fairness, and it's this idea of, hey, you've wronged me, so now I'm going to wrong you back. Even if we do it passive-aggressively and in such harmless little ways, there's more going on in our heart than we ever really truly realize. That's why Jesus has given us this call, that it's about this backhanded slap, and now it's not about getting even, and it's not about what's right, it's not about what's fair. It's about how you respond to them. But he goes on from there. He doesn't just talk about responding to insults, but he talks about responding to a ripoff. Verse 40 says this. It says, as for the one who wants to sue you and take away your shirt, let him have your coat as well. Now, that seems like a weird statement, doesn't it? That probably a weird cultural thing. Yes, it is. It is a weird cultural thing. Let me tell you about what was going on in Jesus' day. It was possible to literally sue someone for the very shirt that they had on, the shirt on their back. You could. You could literally sue them and get the shirt off their back. You know, we talked about all these different phrases that have worked their way into our mentality. We talk about the shirt on your back. That's literally where I think that this came from here, because you could sue someone for the shirt on their back. Now, here's the thing. You could sue them for their coat. Their cloak is the way some of your translations are going to say that. You could sue them for their coat or their cloak. But the thing was, is if the judge granted you that, you had to return it at nightfall. Okay? So your coat, you could sue someone for the shirt, but you could, even if the judge gave you permission to have their coat, you had to return it at night. Why? Because this was how they kept warm and kept alive. So literally, you could sue someone for the very shirt on their back, but even if you got their coat, you had to return it at night, so that way they could live. Because that outer garment was needed if you lived in Palestine in that time, so it was literally required to return it every evening. So why don't you think about this here for a minute? What is going on? What is the situation here? Jesus is talking to those people, literally the very poorest of his followers. The very ones that are reduced to nothing but the coats they have on, right? They have been beat up. They have been persecuted. They have been, had everything taken from them. Now, notice here that Jesus is talking about those that have been sued for their shirts, right? Probably a false accusation type of thing, and they lost the court battle, and now they don't have anything except for just this coat that they have on. And notice what Jesus says. Don't just give him your shirt. Give him your coat. That is radically different than the way most people handled things, isn't it? Radically different. I love what Romans 12, 17 through 21 says. We'll put this on the screen so you can read it. But it says, do not repay anyone evil for evil. Picture that. Think about that phrase. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Give careful thought to do what is honorable in everyone's eyes. If possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Friends, do not avenge yourselves. Instead, leave room for God's wrath, because it is written, vengeance belongs to me. I will repay, says the Lord. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For in doing so, you will be heaping fiery coals on his head. Do not be conquered by evil, but conquer evil with good. This radical call that Jesus is giving us. Not only do you have those times where you're insulted and the way you respond is a huge thing, but what happens if someone's trying to just take everything you have? Jesus goes, well, give it to them, right? Because their life is so much more than just the things that we have. It's so much more than being defined by the things that tend to own us a lot of times. We tend to be defined by our stuff. And Jesus is going, look, you're not defined by your stuff. They want it, give it. Why? Because it's about loving your enemy. If they're hungry, feed them. If they're thirsty, give them something to drink. It's just this radical thing that Jesus is calling us to do. But he goes on to a third one here, talking about responding to forced labor. Most of you in here have probably heard about this before. This is yet another cultural thing that we go, wait, what do you mean about go 1 mile? Because in verse 41, it says, if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them too. So let's set the stage here. Let's explain what that means. This actually goes all the way back to the Persians. The Persians had developed kind of this little version of the Pony Express, if you want to picture that. That's the best way I know how to describe it. They literally could deliver letters and packages, and you were allowed to steal a horse. Well, not really steal, you were allowed to, quote, borrow a horse. You know, you were required to return it, but you could just go along and borrow a horse, and all that other kind of thing. The origin of that with the Persians has kind of gone on. So the Romans have taken this concept that's been going on with the Persians, and by Roman time, this type of thing was really common, but it wasn't just about horses, it was about everything. A Roman official, a Roman soldier, could literally walk up to anyone and say, you have to carry this for me for a mile. That was the law. And you had to do it. If you said, but I'm late for church and David's going to make fun of me when I walk in front of everyone, the Roman soldiers wouldn't care about that. The Roman officials wouldn't care about that. No matter what, you were required by law to carry that for a mile. All right, are you with me on all that here? A good example of this, the most famous one, would be Simon the Cyrene forced to carry Jesus' cross, right? Jesus, he's carrying his little crossbar and he keeps falling, and they force a guy named Simon to carry the cross for him. That was the actual law. He could have carried it up to a mile. We don't know how long Simon carried it, but this is a very visual example of what that looks like. So now, Jesus is saying, if someone forces you to go 1 mile, and I want you to stop here for a minute, because every Jew just about had this sort of experience where a Roman said, here, carry my gear. And they hated it, y'all. I mean, let's be really honest. None of us like having our days interrupted, right? We're in the zone, we're doing something. We don't like someone going in and going, hey, look, you've got to do this thing that you really don't want to do. I want you to carry my gear for a mile. And the Jewish people, they were being occupied by the Romans. They couldn't stand the Romans. So now you have this Roman soldier who could go up to a good Jewish person and go, look, you have to carry this for a mile. But Jesus says, don't just carry it 1 mile, carry it 2. Because if you think about what Jesus is really saying, there's really 2 ways to go about any task, right? Let's talk about it's summertime. We keep having rain and our lawns are getting huge and tall, right? You know, anybody want to admit you hate mowing your lawn? None of you. Wow. Okay, that's a horrible example then, because, you know, two of you hate mowing your lawn. The rest of you are like, I love it. It's the greatest thing. So this is a lousy example, but we're going to give it anyway. Let's pretend you've got a task you have to do that you do not want to do. A task that you just go, I don't want to do that, God. There's 2 ways you can go about it, right? You can mow your lawn with the most bitter expression in the world and go, it's so hot out here, I can't stand it. You know, you pretend like, I mean, it feels like you're mowing the Sahara Desert, right? You're going, come on, it's so hot, what's the point? What's the other way you can do that? Because here, Jesus is calling for a radical response. When he's saying, don't just go 1 mile, go 2 miles. If you think about what Jesus is really saying, is he's saying, look, you need to do those very things that you don't want to do, you need to do it cheerfully. So much so you're even willing to go above and beyond. You're willing to do it another way. Another way you can mow your lawn is you can be like, look at this day. Man, it's clear. The skies are there. There's some pretty clouds over there. I'm seeing dove, which makes me hungry for dove. You know, you can just walk around and just have this incredible experience and begin to look at things in a little different way. When Jesus is talking about responding to forced labor, he's talking about your attitude. He's talking about the way you respond to things. When your enemy, when the very person you can't stand comes up and forces you to do something you don't want to do, Jesus goes, man, do it and make the best of it. Have fun with it. Enjoy it. You with me on all that? Because I want you to think about what that kind of cheerfulness does to someone. Imagine being a Roman soldier who comes up to Mark and says, Mark, I want you to carry this with me for a mile. Mark goes, sure, I could do that. Man, I could do it for 2. Hey, talk to me for a little bit. How's your day going? What's going on? Imagine what that cheerfulness would do to that Roman soldier. They'd be like, what's up with this guy? I don't understand this at all. What kind of thing is going on in them? Whatever it is, I just don't get it at all, because he's supposed to hate this. And instead, he's acting like this is the greatest thing that happened to him all day long. You catch this radical way, this change in our thinking that Jesus is challenging us to do? It's an incredible thought to think about how God can use you in the very midst of the things that you hate to do, how God can use you in the midst of that. Some of you are going to go to work tomorrow and you're going to wake up and go, ah. We call her Lori because she has to work with me. She's not here to defend herself. I shouldn't pick on Lori, right? But how many times do we do that? We go, oh, I don't want to do this. And God's going, look, you have this incredible opportunity to do it and do it well and be cheerful, because people will see the difference that I am making inside of you. It's this incredible call when you're forced to do the very things you don't really want to do. This fourth example that Jesus gives is fascinating, because he was talking about borrowing. It very much was. Verse 42 says, give to the one who asks you, and don't turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. Okay, now this is a little bit different, because I'm telling you, I don't think this is Jesus saying you need to give to every freeloader who comes and asks for money. I don't think that's at all what Jesus has in mind here. I think he's not recommending that you give, just have this open hand and go, look, my checkbook's yours, take what you want. I don't think Jesus is saying that whatsoever. But I think what's going on here is Jesus is calling his people to something radical, which is deep generosity, which is this deep down generosity towards others. Jesus talked about this further in Luke 6, and I love Luke 6:35. We'll put it here so you can see it. It says, "But love your enemies, do what is good, and lend, expecting nothing in return." Now, notice this fact. Jesus says, lend to someone, right? Lend to them without trying to get anything else from them. Notice this. It's not a case of you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. Jesus makes the case, lend to them without expecting anything in return. You just give, you just give, you just give, and you don't expect back. You with me on all that? And notice how Jesus describes this. How does he describe it? You're doing what is good. And even further than that, it's about loving your enemies. Can I catch that picture here for a minute? This act of lending, notice it's lending to your enemies here for a minute. This act of lending is doing the good thing, but it's really, truly, ultimately an act of love is what you see going on. Jesus wants his followers to get past this tight fist, penny-pinching attitude that goes, this is mine and I'm never going to share it. And if you're like me, it's so easy to have that kind of an attitude. Right? Not just with our finances, but we do it with our time. We do it with our properties. We do it with our monies. We do it in so many other things. It's always about a judgment call. Are they worthy of my time? Are they worthy of my finances? Are they worthy of this? Are they worthy of this? And Jesus is saying this radical call of it's not about their worthiness at all. This is about you. And this fourth thing that Jesus is giving and talking about borrowing is just this incredible call that's about our attitude, not just towards money. It's our attitude towards generosity. And it's about Jesus changing our motives and not about getting something in return. Guys, these are four tough things, aren't they? Yeah, if you could handle all four of those, you could just leave the room right now. You discuss the rest of us. We don't want to see you, right? You know, you're too much like Jesus. Go sit out in the hall. We'll see you later. We'll do all that. This isn't easy, right? I mean, it's really, truly not. Which brings us to the point, why respond this way when you're wronged? Because Jesus has just given us four things, and he's talked about why respond this way. He's given us four incredible examples. Why respond this way? The question is, what's really going on in your heart when you're insulted? What's really going on in your heart when you're ripped off? What's really going on in your heart when you have to do the things that you don't really want to do? What's going on in your heart when someone wants something from you? This is very much a heart issue. This is about what's going on inside of you. And Jesus is saying all this. Why should we respond this way when we're wrong? Because it's about a radical show of love. Truly. Did you catch what the next verse was? Verse 43 says, "You've heard it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. For he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and he sends his rain on the righteous and the unrighteous." Notice it's very much this idea of love. Very much this idea of letting love be the thing that changes the way we treat other people. These are four concrete examples of what it looks like when you let love dictate your actions instead of an idea of what you consider fair to you. But when we, most of us, live our lives, we tend to focus on what we consider is fair to us. But it's about this radical show of love. And this is amazing. This is incredible. Love is an act of resistance. It's an act of resistance in the face of being wronged. It's an act of rebellion in this world that says when you're wronged, man, you need to wrong someone back in retaliation. But Jesus puts forth this rebellious idea, this radical idea that he goes, no, it's not about that. It's about you love them in the midst of all of that. Thanks to Jesus, we have to get let go of that legalistic obsession with fairness. Because now it's not about fairness. Honestly, you know why that is? Because aren't we glad Jesus isn't fair with us? I mean, if you think about it, if Jesus was fair with us, oh, buddy, oh, man. But as Jesus' followers, it's this call to dictate yourself, to direct yourself, to dedicate yourself towards the highest welfare of others, even your enemies. It's about loving them more than you love yourself. You put up with the insults of others in love. You put up with the wrongs of others in love. And if that sounds impossible, that's because it is. It's because it is. There's a Christian rock band that I love. They've been around for years, named Skillet. They have an old song called A Little More that I love that song. The second verse of A Little More says, "Love is indestructible, so take a hold." They go a little bit later and they say, it's talking about how God will stand beside you, never leave you through it all, and faith will bring a way to the impossible. Then they go into the chorus that says, "Oh, let the world crash, love can take it. Let the world come crashing down. Oh, let the world crash, love can take it. Love can take a little, love can give a little more." I love those words right there, because that's what it's about. And if you're like just about everybody else on the planet, you have been hurt time after time after time. So what is Jesus calling you to do? To refuse to withdraw into yourself, to continue to put yourself out there, to not run from the hurt, because that's what love does. It continues to put itself out there. It continues to put itself in positions where you're going to get hurt. It continues to put itself out there for the best of other people. And it's not about fairness to us. And does it hurt? Absolutely. Are people going to do things that are painful? Yes, absolutely. But love is a whole lot bigger than the hurt they cause you. This is the radical call. To many people in the world, this looks like weakness. Because people go, if someone hits you, you hit them back. You stand up for yourself, right? But in fact, it's really the opposite. It's not weakness, it's strength. Because I want you to think about this. Only the strongest among us can ever live that way. And I already mentioned how impossible that is. It's because living like this doesn't come from our own power. It comes from God within you. So I want to ask you this question. How do you respond when people hurt you? Try and get even? Try and love in the midst of it? Man, God has called us to something radical, something huge, loving people, even those that hurt us. And then what happens? God's like, man, I know it hurts. It hurts me too. But yet we can do this. And then you get up the next day and you put yourself out there for love's sake, and it hurts. And that night, Jesus holds you and he says, man, I know it hurts. It hurts me too. You get up the next day, and you put yourself out there and love the very people that are going to hurt you, and it hurts. And that night, Jesus puts his arms around you and says, hey, we can do this. I know it hurts. It hurts me too. This is the radical call that Jesus has put on our life, to love others no matter what. That's a challenge for me this week. That's a challenge for you as well. Because I want you to understand, love can take it. And love always has more to give than we can ever give. Love always has more to give than you and I are capable of. When we rest in Jesus, he takes those hurts and he makes them something beautiful. And says, man, this is just an example of how my love has changed you. And it's a beautiful testimony to that. I hope that this week, if someone hurts you, someone insults you, someone's ripping you off, you're into some sort of forced thing, things you don't really want to do, you get asked to give more of yourself than you really want to give, respond in love. This is the call that Jesus has given us. Let's have a word of prayer as our praise team is coming up and we begin to wrap up this part of our service. Let's pray. Father, thank you for that incredible, awesome power of love. Love is probably the most powerful thing that you've given us, because love is what puts you on the cross, that love is your very nature. Love cannot be defined without your existence, because you are love. So help us to love people this week, even if it hurts. Help us to love, even if people try and take advantage of us. Help us to love, even if it's people we disagree with. Help our lives to be characterized by our love for you that overflows into our love for them. We thank you that love can take it, and that love can continue to give. So we pray that you'll use our efforts to serve you this week. You'll use the love that we have that you have given us, and it's going to impact everyone we see. That people are going to go, man, what is up with that person? They are so full of love, and whatever they have, I want that in my life. Use us, use our love, even in the midst of hurts this week. For your name we pray. Amen.